It's true that some things change as we get older. But if you're a woman over 40 and you're dealing with insomnia, brain fog, moodiness, and weight gain, you don't have to accept it as just another part of aging. And with Midi Health, you can get help and stop pushing through it alone. The experts at Midi understand that all these symptoms can be connected to the hormonal changes that happen around menopause. And Midi can help you feel more like yourself again. Many healthcare providers aren't trained to treat or even recognize menopause symptoms. MIDI clinicians are menopause experts. They're dedicated to providing safe, effective, FDA-approved solutions for dozens of hormonal symptoms, not just hot flashes. Most importantly, they're covered by insurance. 91% of MIDI patients get relief from symptoms within just 2 months. You deserve to feel great. Book your virtual visit today at joinmidi.com. That's joinmidi.com.
When you think of skyrocketing brands like Aloe, Allbirds, or Skims, it's easy to credit their success to great products, sleek branding, and brilliant marketing. But here's the overlooked secret. The real magic lies in the engine behind the scenes, the business powering their business. For millions of brands, that engine is Shopify, making selling seamless for them and shopping effortless for us. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout Aloe Yoga uses. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/retail, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/retail to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/retail.
If you haven't noticed, it's winter, and now more than ever, I'm in need of a little treat. That's why I joined First Leaf, a wine club that delivers my favorite types of wine right to my door. Because there's really no better treat than a glass of delicious red, white, or rosé. So go ahead and treat yourself to world-class wines from First Leaf. Go to tryfirstleaf.com/winter to get your first 6 bottles for just $44.95 with free shipping. That's tryfirstleaf.com/winter.
That's the second time it's gone off.
They never go home, those boys.
The second captain's world service.
And I said, I want to win the league, but I want to win it better. You can understand that, can't you?
Yes.
Good lad.
So he's almost like having a second captain in the team.
Second captain, first captain, whatever.
There was a telling moment during the second half at Murrayfield yesterday, I felt, with Scotland trailing by 29 points to 11 on their way to their 11th defeat in a row to Ireland. The cameras panned to the stands.
Oh.
Do you know what I'm talking about?
Oh, yes.
To pick out two of Scotland's best players, Sione Tupulotu, who was out injured, and Finn Russell, who had joined him at this stage on the sidelines. The two of them having a great old laugh with each other. Not sure about what, but it was difficult to escape the conclusion that these lads are not exactly mentality monsters, are they? Welcome to Monday's Second Captain's Rugby Podcast. Hey, Simon, hey, Murph Aiken.
Hey, lads. I
couldn't believe what I was seeing.
You seem pained by this, Murph.
Well, I'm pained every year by them, but it's just outrageous. Genuinely, I'm just trying to think of, you know, Peter O'Mahony and Caelan Doris. Sitting
on scowling, Murph, which is what you want.
With 80. Well, no, I'm
with the miserable beanpole this week. I think you do want a bit of scowling, actually.
It's not that I want them to look like they're miserable. I want them to be miserable. I want them to care enough about this entire tournament that we decide to care about as fans and watchers.
They keep telling us they care. I mean, yeah. We keep thinking they're going to give us a rattle and then it doesn't happen.
Yeah, like,
and Finn Russell said he does that on the pitch as a way to mentally reset. He smiles or laughs or giggles.
And he does, to be fair. Finn Russell is an unusual player. Mm. You see him shaking off mistakes and laughing. You know, he does have a bit of that joie de vivre about him, Simon, but I didn't think
you don't need to mentally reset when you're on the bench.
That's what I mean.
It's I don't want you to look miserable. I want you to be miserable. Mm. And at the end of the day, these guys are just jokers. Now, I want to say that I predicted Scotland to win on Friday. Okay, mm-hmm. I want to put that on the record. But I also want to say that the second England beat France on Saturday, I texted you, Simon, on Saturday evening, and I said, I'm changing my prediction right now. Scotland are going to lose tomorrow. because there is a slim chance they could win the championship.
Well, you didn't record an emergency podcast to change your predictions, so of course unfortunately your original prediction stands.
I wouldn't feel...
We'll have the text here on just...
Yeah, I wouldn't be that egotistical to say that we have to record something on a Saturday evening just to get it on the record. Well, no, I am that egotistical, but I wouldn't show it in this particular sense. But yeah, I mean, the second France lost, I was like...
Why did that make a difference?
Because Scotland have a chance of winning the tournament.
Oh, right.
I mean, Scotland are a disgrace to World Cup.
And the second that happened, I was like, okay, this is literally worth 20 points to Ireland. And in the final analysis, that's exactly how many points it was
worth. Damien Britton emails in, lads, something that's getting no mention by anyone other than me is the possibility of Ireland moving to the top of the Six Nations Roll of Honour this year. Since the inception of the Six Nations in 2000, it's been played 25 times. England have 7 wins, Wales, France and Ireland each have 6, but France and Wales have 4 slams each compared to Ireland's 3. So Ireland currently sit 4th in the Roll of Honour, but, and perhaps permutations man can confirm this with his abacus, if Ireland win this year's championship, they will leapfrog everyone into first place, as Ireland have more slams than England already, 3-2. So yes, all the talk of 3 in a row is merited, but top of the Roll of Honour of Six Nations, who cares about the 5 nations when we were shy, is also worth some serious bragging rights. Regard from Damien. What about it, permutations man? I'll leave the abacus out for this one.
Well, the winners of all the 8 ties go through to the quarterfinals.
Damien is absolutely correct.
Oof. Go from 4th to 1st in the Roll of Honour. One Grand Slam.
Yeah, and we don't even really need to win the Grand Slam. We need to win if we win the championship, then we will go top. But as it happens, if
join England, but then we already have more Grand Slams than England, as Damien says. Yeah.
But as it turns out, win the Grand Slam as well, and then, you know, that just...
Is that the official tiebreaker, or has Damien just put that in as a tiebreaker?
No,
it sounds like a fair tiebreaker.
Why not be level, I mean, it sounds pretty good to me.
Also, we were the worst nation pre-Six Nations. We were the worst 5 Nations nation.
Yeah.
We had a losing record against every team, including Scotland.
And now here we are. You know, that's pretty
thank
good.
You, professionalism. Thank you, Italy. Yeah. Italy being in it suits us.
There are some other permutations.
Oh, yeah.
I have noticed an epidemic of pre-hatch chicken counting in the country today. And with that in mind, I'm sure you'll appreciate an update on the possible permutations that would see Ireland crowned Six Nations champions.
I would love to hear them weekly, to be honest.
Can I just say as well, doing this after round 2 does mean there are quite a lot of permutations. But
how predictable other results are.
Well, listen, the second thing that's worth reiterating, actually, is that if Ireland complete the Grand Slam, they can't be caught by France or England, or indeed Scotland, racking up bonus points. So just for people who aren't as au fait as maybe
Simon,
others might
you're already
yeah, there's
dubious.
A rule that if you win all the games, you get an extra bonus. Yeah.
You get 6 points, basically, which means that you can't be caught. So if Ireland beat Wales in round 3 and Italy in round 5 with a try bonus point, as we all hope and expect them to do, so that's 5 point hauls from Italy and Wales games, then Ireland will have 20 points. If France beat Scotland and Italy with a bonus point, as you might also expect them to do, then they will be on 16 points. So it may well come down to the Ireland-France game. That's what people are looking at in round 4 on March the 8th. If Ireland get a losing bonus point, i.e. finish within 7 points of them, and deny France 4 tries, then they will obviously be in a brilliant position to win the championship. Obviously 5 point holes over Italy and Wales dependent. If France win by more than 7 with a try bonus, they will finish on 21 points. We will not be able to catch them, so we still have to do our business against France. It goes down to scoring difference if teams finish level on points. France currently have a current points difference of +42. We have a points difference of +19. That obviously could yet come back to haunt us. England can also get to 21 points, by the way. They have easier games than we do as well. They have Wales and Italy, but they have Scotland at home. We have France at home. They can get to 21 points as well. Their scoring average is currently -4, so we're still in a good position relative to England, but we would also have to get that losing bonus point against France if England take a bonus point in those last 3 games.
So how do Wales win the Six Nations?
Wales cannot win the Six Nations, nor indeed... Can Italy? Actually, let's just leave Italy out. Ireland's concession of 3 tries in garbage time in the last 2 games. I mean, we all said it. I mean, it was sloppy, but it could also actually be crucial. Scotland, Owen.
Can win the Six Nations?
Not entirely out of this.
It's a blizzard when they're out there. Fire on the pill, round the corners.
They win their last 3 games against Wales, France and England with a bonus point. They can get to 20 points. That would be enough to get them into a tie. But scoring difference will be their Achilles heel. They're on -2, having already played Italy. The England-Scotland game in round 3 will clarify matters somewhat in that respect. But just to reiterate the situation as it pertains to Ireland, France. If France win by more than 7 with a try bonus point against us, they will finish on 21 points. We won't be able to catch them.
Simon's got his hand.
What was your gut reaction when Elliot Daly ran over the try line?
Oh, pure joy.
Pure joy.
Post-colonial pure joy. Mm-hmm. Oh, absolutely. It was brilliant.
What about the permutations, brilliant man, part of your brain?
Oh, I mean, bring it on, I said. You know, I said, Elliot, you've caused me a problem there. But I wouldn't be a permutations man if I didn't just want to go.
No, surely Wales mathematically are still in this. What if Wales win the rest of their games? They're on 3 wins.
Yeah.
We lose 2 games. Oh, France, England, and Scotland have all already lost a game as of Italy.
Can I just...
Have you had a look at Wales?
Yeah, I've had a look at Wales. Yeah,
there's mathematically no chance they can win it.
No, mathematically there is a chance. Realistically,
A little bit different. This is about maths. It's not about vibes.
Did you see
it's
Wales?
About permutations.
Did you see Wales at the weekend?
Yeah, I was disappointed in a once proud rugby nation going down the way.
I mean, pretty bad. It even crossed Ken's desk how bad Wales were.
Well, I heard they'd lost the last 14 matches in a row. And yeah. I was wondering how that was even possible. It must have taken years to do that.
Yeah, I mean, not years. I mean, a year and a half. Teams usually play like, what?
10, maybe.
10, 11 games in a year. So it's been a while since they've had the sweet taste of victory. I mean, the fact of the matter is, Ken, they haven't produced a rugby player since Gareth Bale got them to Euro 2016.
They did some kind of a deal.
They did a deal with the devil. You could only be middling at one sport.
10, 9, 5, 3, Cork down!
Yeah, things are getting exciting. Thank you, Jim Sherwin. Sam.
Okay. Okay, well, I mean,
that's an old one we used to trot out. On radio.
Crunch that, come on.
Mark Horgan was laughing all day last week.
He spent an entire day.
Can we hear that again?
Crunk down.
Crunk down.
I think 10, 9, 5, 3, Cork down!
Crunch.
Yeah, he actually just didn't finish either word. Down. Crunch or crunk. Crunk down.
Did you say who scored the try? Bonus points if you can remember who scored the try.
Oh, Rob Henderson.
Yeah, I think it was Rob Henderson in Rome, perhaps. No, it's got to be against France. You wouldn't be that excited about a try.
No, it was against Italy.
It was Italy in Rome, I think, yeah.
Part of that. Yeah, he scored a hat-trick, didn't he?
Yeah.
There you go. The days we used to get that excited with the win over Italy, but listen, let's
you've moved on to loftier aims.
Ronan O'Gara gave Sam Prendergast the seal of approval on the BBC. That comes up in our chat with Shane and Rory. I felt Rogers as watchable as always. Difficult to get a handle on as a presenter, no matter what Gabby Logan said to him. Even when agreeing, he sounded like he was disagreeing.
Yeah. Gabby Logan also didn't understand the Ronan O'Gara pause for effect as
well. Oh, so she'd jump in and
she was like, oh, we've got to keep the pot boiling here. But yeah. O'Gara was just like taking his time. He was deciding whether or not to go both feet in on whatever topic it was. But his presence alone did allow John Barclay to tell actually quite a funny story. And apologies to those of you who watched on BBC yesterday, but I may tell you it as briefly as I can now on. Barclay and Ronan O'Gara were opposing team captains in a game, and there was a scrap in which both of them were heavily involved. And the referee came over and said, listen, you're two of the most, you're both team captains. You're two of the most respected names in rugby. And O'Gara goes, I don't have a fucking clue who this clown is. To the referee. And you have to say, like, Barclay took it in very good form. I mean, it's given John Barclay the best after-dinner story that he could possibly imagine. So.
Ever wondered just how good or bad your diet really is? The Mayo Clinic Diet has just launched its new diet score, a game changer in tracking your health. Your diet score is personalized based on tracking key activities that deliver healthy habits, support weight loss, and deliver long-term sustainable success. The Mayo Clinic Diet was developed by doctors and dietitians from the world-renowned Mayo Clinic. It's real foods, no gimmicks or fad diets, just life-changing healthy nutrition. Join today for access to customizable meal plans, tracking tools, group coaching, and at-home workouts. Everything you need for long-term success. Get your free diet score now at mayoclinicdiet.com/go. No sign up needed. Now, the Mayo Clinic Diet accepts the Care Credit Card. The Mayo Clinic Diet. Healthy weight loss for life. When you think of skyrocketing brands like Aloe, Allbirds, or Skims, it's easy to credit their success to great products, sleek branding, and brilliant marketing. But here's the overlooked secret. The real magic lies in the engine behind the scenes, the business powering their business. For millions of brands, that engine is Shopify,
making selling seamless for them and shopping effortless for us. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout Alo Yoga uses. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/retail, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/retail to upgrade your selling today. Shopify.com/retail.
Hey, Prime members. Are you tired of ads interfering with your favorite podcasts? Good news. With Amazon Music, you have access to the largest catalog of ad-free top podcasts included with your Prime membership. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/adfreepodcasts. That's amazon.com/adfreepodcasts to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. I don't know if you knew this, but anyone can get the same premium wireless for $15 a month plan that I've been enjoying. It's not just for celebrities. So do like I did and have one of your assistants switch you to Mint Mobile today. I'm told it's super easy to do at mintmobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 for 3-month plan equivalent to $15 per month required. Intro rate first 3 months only. Then full price plan options available. Taxes and fees extra. See full terms at mintmobile.com.
A lot of times you say something on this show and you're like, geez, you know, that could come back to bite me in the arse now, you know. But like, I can just come out and say what I like about the Scotland rugby team. They will, you'll never ever get a chance to play audio back to me and be like, what were you thinking? How could you have come out and said such a thing?
Oh, Flood of Scotland, when will we see your like again?
Scotland are a disgrace to World Sport.
That fought and died for
the Jocks.
Your wee bit hill and glen.
And you, you can
stood against him.
My name's Jackley McCaffrey.
Proud Edward's army.
You're always on the team of teal. Never fit.
And sent him home.
The Scotland rugby team, the sporting world's greatest pinata.
Do you think again?
Like, I can sit here year after year and laugh at the Scottish rugby team, and I'll never be called out. It's an amazing freedom that I have.
Three Scotsmen. It's been that all day, and it's come loose, and Hamish Watson belted it into the sand, and that is it. And 38 years of hurt are over for Scottish rugby.
10 points out of 10. Two of the three teams that could possibly beat us have been beaten. Three championships in a row is on, and we're the only team left with a possibility of a Grand Slam. Everything's moving along nicely, Shane.
Sure is. Very good. Very happy.
Rory, how are you feeling about things?
Good, yeah. I got back from Edinburgh last night, playing full of happy Irish fans and players' fathers, and everyone making their way happily back, and two banana skins negotiated. Two games that I think people, after November, were pretty... a little bit worried about, and two potential slip-ups there that they've negotiated, and now it's opened up for them. I did think the schedule opened up for them anyway, but all roads lead to the Aviva in a month's time.
Negotiated, Shane, with less difficulty yesterday than you might have imagined?
Far less difficulty. Scotland were very disappointing. Ireland came out almost as I expected Scotland to come out, you know, with the ferocity of a home, you know, home supporters backing them. The description I used, I was up at Murrayfield as well. The description I used was the Scottish team, they were meek, you know, they just were within their shells. They weren't physical. Ireland were completely dominant. But, you know, Ireland probably never got out of third gear because they didn't need to get out of third gear. They could have, you know, they could have put at least another 14 points up before half time. But I say, you know, we have this conversation a lot about Scotland. I just don't know where that performance or non-performance came from them. It was really surprising.
Yeah, Roy, I was just thinking, for them at home, they apparently hate us. We're the team they want to beat most. Six Nations game. This has been building up for years, their frustration with us. A good build-up. They have a great national anthem. And then it manifests itself as like this subdued... I understand teams coming out and being a bit too mad.
Rory mentioned Chris Hoy as well. And that was, you know, he was there. I was thinking, this has... It really does emotionally, the players should be built up to it's all there for them. Put it that way, it's all there for them.
And I think that can manifest itself as, you know, giving away too many penalties, too aggressive, maybe a yellow card, whatever it is, or dropping the ball, making mistakes. But being subdued and within yourself makes no sense. And sorry, I'll just develop this a tiny bit more. You were at this press conference as well when we beat them in the World Cup, and Gregor Townsend was there, and I expected not tears, but like deep anguish. And he just seemed kind of relatively content, and yeah, they beat us, they're a better team. And I just wonder if there's like a real, if they really hate losing enough to us.
It was summed up for me, and I do understand that this may be a little bit unfair, but after Jack Conlon's try, when the game was put to bed and their comeback had been quashed, the camera flashed to Finn Russell and Sione Tuipulotu.
It might be unfair, but I started the show with it.
Okay, well, yeah. Like, I mean, the two of them, I don't know what was said, yeah, gallows humour.
A bit of a joke or whatever, two of them laughed. I just couldn't imagine two Ireland players, two leading Ireland players in a similar scenario, having a laugh on the sideline.
Yeah, and that summed up Scotland a little bit for me and this Scotland team. And it's like when they went on the beer before this. Remember the Ireland game a couple of years ago? They went on the beer and they subsequently got banned after the game. And you know, you had the Hogg and Russell, you know, Hogg dropping the ball over the line, and the catalogue of incidents in this fixture over the last couple of years. And, you know, the Brian Cox line from Succession, you're not serious people, comes to mind. Like, it's when you look, I think the Irish team were so tuned in. They have listened to and read every one of the BBC pundits who've picked seven Scottish players in Lions backlines.
Right.
Easterby before the tournament mentioned the secondary note motivate. They obviously want to win the Six Nations and perform, but they want to go. They want to get as many Irish players in that Lions tour as possible. And I'd say they will never hear about it. But I'd say whether it's up in the dressing room wall or whether it's just internal motivation, they knew that they were in one-on-one battles for their Lions places against players that were getting a lot of airtime and a lot of hot air blown up them. And they've beaten this team 10 times in a row, and they've just gone and hammered them for the 11th time. And when Andy Farrell sits down and he's got a 50-50 between an Irish player and a Scottish player, he can't in good conscience swing for the guy who's lost 11 times in a row to the same opposition ahead of a player that's part of this machine. And I think that played into it as well. And Ireland almost, Chris Hoy came on, and I almost expected Caelan Doris to go over and shake his hand because he walked within it means. But Doris didn't even know Chris Hoy was there. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't a disrespect to Chris Hoy. He was zoned in, and they were so zoned in at the start of the game. The emotional stuff can overwhelm you. Remember Munster got too overwhelmed before the first Heineken Cup final. They had that kind of night before. They had this open session of kind of telling everyone what they
actual
meant
tears
to them. They got completely overwhelmed. So it can get on top of you, and you can become and play within yourself. But I just thought it was such, I don't know why Scotland annoy me so much or disappoint me so much, because I expect more from them every time and they never deliver, and yesterday kind of summed them up.
Nobody beats Scotland 12 times on the trot. I can't believe this run continues, and I did a bit about it at the weekend, but there wasn't they didn't feel like the urgency that should be there when you have this, you know, horrific record hanging over you. And I'm also trying to like Rory, I'm trying to figure out why I'm sort of, you know, get so kind of annoyed at Scotland. I don't have a dog in the race here, but it's because I think I like the way they play at their best. Like, I admire the way they play, especially their backs, and when they get going, you know, they throw those flat wide passes, and you know, the trail lines inside and the drop backs in, and you know, they do some really nice stuff, but it's far too inconsistent, even the backs. But you know, coupled with forwards who just don't deliver often enough, you know, and they're, you know, the sign of a good team or even a half decent team is that their deviation doesn't drop too much. You know, they don't play brilliant one week and then terrible the next. You know, that's something like their early days of professionalism. And like Leinster actually were quite like that, you know, when I first started. And the basic thing you do is you keep your performance level up. You might lose, but your performance doesn't drop to the extent that we saw Scotland at the weekend. So yeah, I think I'm kind of invested in Scotland for some reason. That's because I think they could be so much better, or should be so much better than they often deliver.
So with all that said then, Shane, what about this email from Jared Wallace, who says, the fact is, a great team would have put at least 50 points on that Scottish team. They were terrible. They conspired to take their own best players out of the game, two of their best players. I've been reading and hearing how Ireland were ruthless and it just triggered me. From 17-0 up with absolute dominance, in the 40th minute, cheaply, lazily, brainlessly, Ireland put the ball into the scrum and gifted Scotland the try they did nothing to deserve. Just like against England, we gave up a soft consolation try at the end. From the bonus point try in the 60th minute, with the Scotland team in disarray, there was knock-on after knock-on, turnovers, fumbles, penalties. South Africa, New Zealand, any of the truly great teams of years gone by would have put 50 or 60 points on this dreadful Scottish team. They're not killers, as in Ireland are not killers.
Just calm down a little bit is what I'd say. You know, if what Ireland have done is get over the line for the last two championships and won them, and they've put themselves in a position now not just to win this championship but potentially win a Grand Slam. Were they a little bit sloppy right at the end of the England game, having secured victory? Yes, they were. But you know, cut them a bit of slack. And could they have delivered a slightly better performance against Scotland? Yeah, they could have. As I said, they should have scored two tries in the first half, maybe three. They didn't keep the foot down. There was lots of good play, but they could have easily put 50 on it. But I'm actually not panicking, and I think, not that I'm not panicking, I'm not stressed to it. Sometimes, you know, when you're almost completely in control of a game, which they were, aside from a slight period either side of half time. You know, the opposition has a little bit of a purple patch. Ireland sort of dismissed them, and when they got back up into the 22 after that initial 10 minutes of the first half, they scored immediately. And there was never any doubt about the result. There was a comfort about everything that they did. You know, they got the bonus points.
It wasn't ruthless, though. I take the point that I have heard that word used a lot over the last 24 hours. And if it was ruthless, they would have obviously put more points on them. There were 40 or 50 points.
Okay. Well, yeah, but listen, I'd calm down a little bit about that. I also think they forgot, and they haven't really done this often in the last year, they've now put two, I think, very good, if not entirely ruthless, performances back to back. And I was kind of still keen to see what Ireland looked like after the England game. You know, sometimes there's a unique circumstances around the first game of the Six Nations, or more aptly around an England game, that Ireland can deliver a performance. But I have to say I was very satisfied by that Ireland performance against Scotland. I know Scotland were bad, but it was still Ireland were in the right mindset, and I think they're in a very good place to build through the rest of the tournament.
Yeah, I hate to be overly negative about it, but I think we need to see this Ireland performance through the prism of Scotland, Rory. So at 17-8, and I thought gave away a very soft try to Van der Merwe. Brilliant finish, but A, Doris shouldn't carry. B, if he does carry, he should carry to just recycle rather than gain any yards. C, the Rookers didn't do a great job. Then it was a 4-on-3, as in it was four Irish defenders to three Scottish attackers. Keenan bites in. And then after that, it goes to 17-8. Then Henshaw goes for a ring row style blitz, but doesn't get close to Hugh Jones, who drifts nicely just to get outside him. But that's what Hugh Jones does, and you should know that. I didn't think it was close to being the correct call on a blitz. And then Kinghorn goes down the left wing. And Gibson Park, who was my man of the match, and probably isn't the guy you expect to be doing this, but hauls down Kinghorn a couple of metres from the try line, and then we give away a clever penalty, so they only kick three at that point. But at 17-8, I thought the momentum had shifted to Scotland, and any sort of a team would have sort of built it from there. But Ireland, I don't think we're remotely ruthless. I thought we should have put, like, what was it, a 14-point differential at the end? I thought it should have been 30. The Ben White try was ultra soft as well. I thought the two tries we conceded were not great at all. I don't know. I saw this through Scottish softness than Irish brilliance.
I think ruthlessness comes in many forms, and I know the two tries were soft. One of them was in garbage time, but their defence was excellent for large parts. But the stats are quite surprising. Ireland made a lot more tackles than Scotland, but they were so comfortable for most of that game. And yes, Hugh Jones broke them, but you know, Gibson Park, one of your big players, comes up with a big play. They left points out there, but they do attack in volume. The way they kind of almost back themselves to come back again. I suppose it didn't work for France on Saturday, and that's the worry, is that if they get into these positions against a better team like France and don't take their opportunities, well, against France those opportunities might not come up again. But I do think the standard of the performance overall kind of tips the balance for me into being very positive about Ireland. I thought in the first 10-15 minutes we saw that clinical edge to their attack that they now need to replicate as conditions get better. Like, it was it rained a lot, and not to make excuses, but it rained a lot in Edinburgh on Sunday morning. You are away from home, and I know Scotland were crap, but they are still like committed, and they're playing at home, and you have to break them. I think some people have started to expect this team to just walk over every opposition. Look, yes, they left points out there. Yes, they can get better, but I would flip it and say that's great at this point of the competition. They've been put into different positions in the two games. They've found ways out of it. They've got bonus points in each game. And if they do start taking all those chances, well, God help Wales in a couple of weeks' time.
And let's not rewrite history here as well, or, you know, how we were discussing this Scottish team prior to the Six Nations in particular. And then, although not a perfect outing for them last time against Italy, we were discussing this about, well, they've had a bit of adversity, they've come through, they've got momentum, Ireland have to go over there, Scotland are going to be fired up, they've got a back line that, you know, all of them might go to the Lions. So, you know, we can't sort of view this in the rear view mirror. Yes, they didn't perform, but they were, you know, they're trying. You know, they were very invested in that game. And Ireland really snuffed them out from the word go and never gave them a sniff. They had a slight sniff. I agree, Simon. They had a slight sniff, but you were never panicked about it. You thought Ireland always could go through up to another gear and pull away from them. You know, Scotland will do something else in this tournament, I'm sure. I don't know if they'll beat England. They might. We don't know. But I tell you, Ireland never gave them a chance to deliver a performance against them.
You were described last week by an emailer, Rory, as the founder, chairman and secretary of the Sam Prendergast fan club. So in that honorary position, what did you make of his performance?
Everyone's welcome. It's €25 a month. You get a blue hat and a picture of Sam signed.
A lot of Munster fans signing up, I'd say.
Yeah, well, maybe a few more after the weekend.
maybe.
I think we're starting to see what the coaches and his teammates, like what you hear behind the scenes about what he does in training, the way he conducts himself around the place. Andy Farrell wouldn't be promoting him in the way that he is if he didn't think there was substance. You know, I always go back to the fact that he bred Owen Farrell and built him into the player he became, and he worked with, there's two templates for a world class 10 are Farrell and Sexton, and he's looking at these players through that prism. He's got two very good options, but I think we saw yesterday the first glimpses in an Ireland shirt really of what Sam Prendergast can become. Already is, but the potential that's there. I think O'Gara called him at halftime on the BBC the master of control. O'Gara is very taken with him. You can tell from the way he's spoken about him post-match in La Rochelle, on his various media platforms. You would expect O'Gara to back Crowley for many reasons. You know, he tried to sign him. He's from Cork. He's ex-Munster. He's been the opposite. He sees how gifted this young kid is. But he's not perfect. His tackle for the try wasn't good enough. One of his kicks earlier on led to almost a Blair Kinghorn break that Ireland managed to turn over. There are errors within his game. But the upside, because I think we focus too much on the errors in a 21-year-old's game, and we don't sometimes step back and go, hang on a second, one of the best 21-year-old out-halves we've ever seen is playing in an Ireland shirt and playing in Six Nations games and winning with bonus points. And
being one of the best for his age at 21?
Certainly in the world right now, he's probably the leading player at his age. Sasha Feinberg and Gonzalo is around the same age, and he's excellent as well, so it's probably between those two. Sexton, when he was 21, was kind of scrapping for Leinster places with Eason Asewa and a few others. O'Gara was kind of starting to break through Cork on. I can't remember exactly what age he got capped, but it took him a long time to build. We're in a different era. Players are coming through, you know, more ready-made for professional rugby. I completely accept that. But no one else really, apart from Feinberg and Gomezelu, is doing this. No one else is playing a player at this age and winning games, and that player is starting to flourish in that jersey. I think Irish rugby should be so excited about what we've got here. And we know if he goes down or he gets injured, or if they want to play a different way, they have two very, very fine options within the squad in Crowley and Frawley. It's an incredible source of depth. But in terms of his decision making, his attacking play yesterday, some of his passing, his wide passing, his even his little around the corner passes, the break, he almost offloaded to Lowe and didn't. And he made the right decision. He didn't force it. Instead, Caelan Doris comes around the corner. If he wanted to be the Hollywood player, and he is able to do that, we saw at the 20s level, he would have done it, but he didn't. He made the right decision for his team, and Doris scored, who was exceptional himself. So I think, you know, it's a really exciting place for Ireland to be, to have this young man in the team and to have the backup that they have as well.
Shane, he spoke really well afterwards as well, and that's impressive in itself. I think that a 21-year-old can speak to a panel on RT like he did.
Well, also that he can tower over Stephen Ferris like he did as well. He's tall. He's
absolutely huge. But he did admit to nerves, and that he was far more nervous in the England game than he was in this one, even though this one was away from home. And if that was him nervous, I'm just thinking, if this guy gets more relaxed, what do we have in our hands?
Unfortunately, you don't judge this guy as a 21-year-old. That's not how we should analyse him. You have to analyse him as the Irish number 10 and how he delivers right now in this moment, and not even what he could be, because he has to be the best right now. And I actually think he's probably proving that. And listen, the debate, I haven't really liked it, because it has been this largely polarised debate that has been, Leinster media versus, everybody else. And actually, that's not a good categorization of how it's been either, because Rory spoke about the way, Ronan has spoken about him, the fact that he's getting picked, the fact that, he's been championed for so long by both coaches of Ireland. And, they're not doing it for any other reason but then to have the best person in that role. And we are definitely seeing him, the whole remit of his skills and his ability when Scotland put pressure on him just to step inside. He just felt very, very comfortable. A few times he come in and we saw his spiral as well, which was impressive. But kind of most of all, it's his ability to take that ball to the line and actually give a ball under sort of extreme pressure to a teammate that either puts them in the place or puts them through a hole or puts them in a slightly better position to get over the gain line. And that's not always easy. He doesn't seem to run, whoever's running the support line, he doesn't seem to run them in directly into the opposition as well. He feels very comfortable in that very, very flat position. And I'm telling you, that is not a comfortable place to be. And it seems that he thrives on opposition line speed. Because from everything I've watched from him, his decision making is as you would want it from a 10, based on what the opposition is doing, not him trying to force it. So he forces it in that he takes it to the line, and they're coming to the line at the same time, and then reads what they do and picks the pass. And he just looked very, very comfortable. The setup that Ireland have with that pod of four, and also sometimes five when he's in it as well, just gives a huge amount of options. And I thought that kind of, that the sophistication of that play, Scotland couldn't deal with it. If you saw the Scottish pod, you could almost read who was carrying the ball into contact every time. In Ireland, it was very, very difficult. There's lots more drops off, much more slip passes or like total pullbacks to a sort of second wave coming around the corner. And he seemed to have his timing and his spacing right, most of the time. So, yeah, very, very impressive performance. Kicked well as well off the ground, which I think is important and is an issue for, had been an issue for Crowley. But, and good to see Crowley come on and get some game time as well.
One nice moment was when Darish tried to run and block either his pass or his run, and he just stepped inside, changed the angle of his hips, and then kicked beautifully into the Scottish 22, I think it was. And he, as Shane says, he loves those moments where he's put under pressure. He really backs his instincts, like a good boxer who sort of can react to what the other fighter is doing. He's able to step, change direction, change his decision in a moment. He's 21. His defence is like his glaring weakness, and it is a weakness. Is that guaranteed to get better? Like, do players get better at things, or can they stay as they were at 21?
Not necessarily, because I remember talking to a senior pro about this, and he said you have to love it if you're going to. But I think his coaches will demand more of him as he fills that frame, as he gets more comfortable, and he's going to have to start, if not winning those collisions, but bringing people down. He does put his body in the line. This maybe not so much with the last try. I think that wasn't a great moment for him, and I'm sure he'd be pulled for that. Yeah. They're holding him to high standards. Shane's right, like, he's the Ireland 10 now. It's not, you're not a kid learning on the job. You're expected to do what your rivals are capable of doing. So he has to improve it. It won't be acceptable if he wants to be the Lions 10, which is now being talked about. All this sort of stuff. He needs to step up as he goes through the levels. But his comfort in possession, the length of his kicking, all the upside is there. Like to be able to swivel and then deliver to the distance that he was doing, it's mightily impressive. But that's not to say he doesn't have things he can finesse.
What about carrying through contact is my other concern, and he did it well before that Doris try. Where, and I like to see that he was able to be tackled by a good tackler and still formed a nice, clean, fast ruck. That has been an issue. He looks like a potential turnover about to happen sometimes, but if he can clean that up as well, because Crowley's excellent at this, but he needs to be able to do that. He needs to be a threat in the carry, through the carry, and then form a nice ruck.
And again, I think he will fill out that frame and will become better at that. And he has got a bit of gas, as we saw in that Bristol game. We saw once or twice yesterday as well. Defences will adjust to him. I thought Joe Schmidt brought a really good plan for him in Australia. They kind of stood off him and said, okay, we know you're not a running threat, so we're going to basically mark all your passing options. So, you know, you got to make the decisions. And he struggled a little bit with that. I mean, I do think we have to also, you know, every time he experiences something new here, it's new to him. Sorry, yeah. That's obvious. But
like, he's not done it with Leicester either. Like,
every game he's getting less space.
Leicester, you know?
Yeah, and he's never played against France before, so that's going to be an experience for him. But he's learning these experiences while also performing largely. But you're right, he does. That's another part that he needs to layer on. And Crowley does have, and we didn't see it because he came on a fullback, but that running threat is something Crowley has on him.
As he fills out as well, that's going to support that. You know, he's got big levers. We saw him in the interview afterwards. You know, he's a monster. So he runs often with the ball in two hands, which is because he's waiting to pick the pass. But he, you know, once he gets into sort of gap mode, he'll look to get those levers out, and his handoff could be, you know, a really significant tool. You know, when he gets a bit more filled out as well.
How do you approach team selection then for the Wales game, Shane? Like, for example, do you bring Crowley in at 10 for this one? Do you possibly even expand on that experiment of having Crowley at fullback with Prendergast at 10? What do you do in terms of the pack? I mean, obviously Jack Conan deserves a start at some point. Wales are so bad now that you nearly see this as the how you approach an Italy game normally, and you can actually do a bit of experimenting.
Yeah, you'd have to be a little bit cautious though as well.
Come on, 14 in a row.
Yeah, listen, if that was a home game, I'd say certainly. I don't see the necessity to sort of, you know, and Ireland don't operate well when they make a raft of changes. You know, there's definitely, you know, there can be tweaks here and there. I think he'll start with Prendergast. I think he should. It might be one, if you know Ireland going well, to give Crowley really significant time. You know, there's no doubt about that. You know, there's a conversation you could have about, you know, what could Crowley potentially do as a 12 as well. Like, you know, that's an interesting way to play. And I think what we're also seeing, you know, right through this competition, is that there's a big difference in, you know, first halves and second halves of games as well. And, you know, the selection of both the bench and the timing of the bench is becoming more crucial. So and the style of play, like, you know, you can generally, you know, it's probably a necessity to go into a game with a number of sort of philosophies almost, because what you're seeing in front of you in a first half and a second half can be sort of wildly different as teams begin to fatigue. So, you know, how you want to attack that fatigue defence and who you want to attack that fatigue defence is becoming sort of, I think, more important than ever. So, yes, a sensible sort of, you know, level of rotation here, but remember, it's a Six Nations game away. You know, they have a tendency, if you take any game in this tournament, you know, lightly, you know, you'll get bitten. And you know, at some point, I assume Wales are going to win a game, and when they do, it's going to be at home. Let's not give a sucker a break.
Just on the Finn Russell one, Finn Russell injury, he passed his HIA apparently. Gregor Townsend said afterwards it was more communication that Pete Horn and a couple of others on the sideline were having with him. There were a couple of things he wasn't remembering about plays. Is it all at all concerning that he passed the HIA and yet was unable to remember certain things about plays, which obviously concerned the medics?
Yeah, I think on one hand it is concerning, but I think everyone accepts that the HIA process is flawed and is not there as a diagnostic tool. As in, you can't diagnose a concussion in HIA. It's a trying to establish whether a player is, for want of a better phrase, compos mentis, and is, you know, it's a standardised test. But it's good, I think, very good that the Scottish acknowledge the fact,
and beyond HIA.
Because they had, you know, they went 6-2. Finn Russell is their co-captain. He's probably the most important player. They had an inexperienced 10 playing, you know, his first game in international rugby, a 10 on the pitch. 10 years ago, a coach would have rushed him back on regardless. Just get him out there, and then, because Finn Russell operates on instinct anyway. But they did have a duty of care to their players. So I think it's encouraging that they were mature and informed enough to also kind of aware enough to kind of go, hang on a second, he's not right. We're not going to put him back on. So the HIA process, it does have flaws and always will have flaws, because it's a 10-minute window to try and figure out if a guy's right to go back on.
I would have thought, though, if he's not remembering things about plays.
But that was post. He was able to negotiate. Yeah. I've done the HIA process, you know, the walking in a straight line, trying to remember sequences of numbers. It's not easy.
So he obviously got that.
He was able to do all of that, and then they got him on the sideline, and they started telling him, okay, next time we're going to run XYZ.
Right.
And he said, then he wasn't comprehending what they were saying, and they went, hang on, he's not right. So I think it's good that it happened, that he didn't go back on. It's disappointing or worrying, yes, that he was able to pass the HIA process, but then even, you know, with concussion, it can come on to you at different times as well. He might have been feeling fine in the dressing room, but he got back out, you get a sensory overload in the stadium, you start thinking about going back on, and suddenly it hits you. So I don't think we're ever going to get a tool that just gets people, like, that's going to go say, he's concussed, get him off. I think what's there is better than what was there before. It's not perfect. They need to keep honing it, and they should review this incident to see what it was.
I think concussion isn't a really well-known science, you know, and that's what sort of makes it scary, and that's why it's such a threat to the game. But I have to say, like, we talk about incidents where we're concerned about coaches pushing people back on or trying to circumvent the rules. Like, we should be shouting this from the rooftop. Amazing kudos to, you know, the Scottish team and coaching and medical staff as well, because they could have pushed him on. It is, it's a really significant game. It's a home game. You know, there's everything that went on before the game as well, and the atmosphere. And for them to take the steps that they did and keep him off the pitch, I think it's the standard by which everybody else should be going from. It really is. And we should be commending them. And, at the next, medical conference, this should be sort of highlighted as, the way to operate. So, we give teams a lot of a kicking when they don't do the right thing. I think we need to commend them when they do.
Completely. And I think the Scots deserve praise, but this should be the norm. And it's finally a little bit of pushback in what I feel is a trend, a really strange and worrying trend, almost of like the 20-minute red card, Entomac getting a short ban, the England under 21 player, the way New Zealand and Australian media in particular react to high tackles now and red cards as if they ruin the game. And this is like a little oasis in the desert of somebody pushing back against what was, if you think back a year or 2 years ago, this was the main thing discussed in the game. It's discussed far less now, mainly through repetition, and the sport has done its best to address it. But I sort of feel like the Southern Hemisphere has won a bit of the culture debate on it, in terms of the entertainment versus danger, weighing up those two elements to the game. Another thing is, I was at an online conference on this with a lot of the world experts, Rory, before Christmas. And these are like, the smartest people in the world who study this, and really a lot of them were into sport anyway and really wanted to find a solution to it. And the sideline assessments are just a bit of a stab in the dark. Sport's best attempt to deal with something working off very limited information, and that people should bear that in mind every time they see a HIA passed.
And the HIA is also a great way of getting a player off a pitch, because if you tell a player you have to go in and do a test rather than you're off, the player will, 10 years ago, certainly the player would refuse to come off. We used to see incidents where Aina Falvey would have to drag lads off because they thought they weren't coming back on. So they would argue that as a way of getting a player off for this assessment to calm him down, it does work. We saw, the gum shield is now in action as well. We saw Ty Byrne and Ryan Baird. I haven't confirmed that, but I'm pretty sure they were both pings on the gum shield. They went in, did their test, were both able to come back on. So, look, it's not perfect. It's not, and I agree with your concerns over the 20-minute red card, but if you step back even 5 years, 10 years, it is in a far better place in terms of the attitudes towards it. Even
funny,
if the players,
I think,
are,
countries like Ireland deserve a bit more praise, because we're kind of one of the better countries, and Scotland are two of the better countries in dealing with it.
Yeah, and Scotland have, if in doubt, set it out up in Murrayfield all over the place. I think it's on their jerseys as well, so they've possibly embraced it more. And maybe it took, they've lost a player in Siobhan Cadogan, and there's been numerous incidents over there as well that have kind of brought them to this point. And yeah, like I think overall it's positive that Gregor Townsend didn't push Finn Russell back in, because I think coaches a long time ago would, but it also, World Rugby need to have a look at the processes.
Shane, England against France, we had hopes for it, all right. We thought it could be good. It fairly delivered, didn't it? It was a bit of a classic.
It was cracking. And afterwards, in a WhatsApp group, a couple of guys I used to play with, and it was kind of, I, for some reason, I felt disappointed. I don't know if it was an England win or just that I wanted to see France win for maybe a showdown. But I also said, the Six Nations is brilliant, isn't it? Like that was my overriding thought. And it sort of confirmed what we always say before the Six Nations. It never goes, you know, every weekend never goes as you think it will go. It just never ever happens, and it's brilliant. You know, it's fantastic, and I don't think it means that, you know, England are high flying and they're back on and everything's rosy in the garden there. It doesn't mean that. And you know, in the same sort of, you know, breath, it doesn't mean that, oh, listen, you know, France are floundering now and they're, you know, they're going to, they're there for the taking in a couple of weeks for Ireland at home. It doesn't, because the Six Nations isn't like that. You know, there are kind of overarching sort of trends in it. Yes, you know, how teams are performing, but it's, you know, what happens on the day. We saw against, you know, we saw it. You know, Ireland, Scotland, didn't make any sense, that performance with Scotland. And then we saw it in a different way for England against France. And it was, you know, France left so many points there, it was kind of ridiculous. We saw again that the influence of Dupont in a different way. You know, we know that his individual play is one thing, but he's also more than that, because when he plays, it seems to be he's the glue that binds all the other players and you know, and how they perform. So when he was a little bit off, they were a bit off. And then you had this sort of success story on the English side, you know, focusing around, you know, Finn Smith and others, that meant that, you know, they delivered some really sort of excellent play as well. But it was just everything that you want from a Six Nations match. And as I was going through it, I was watching it with some family here, and I just kept on saying, this is fantastic, this is great.
Yeah, it was everything that's good about the Six Nations. What I love about the Six Nations, Rory, is that, you know, when England play Scotland, there's something in England's heads about dealing with Scotland. When Scotland play Ireland, there's something in Scottish heads about dealing with Ireland. And I know France beat England away well a couple of years ago, but generally when France play England away, they just get a little bit more nervy and don't play their usual game, and this played out. But still, you don't expect to see the likes of Dupont drop the ball on the line.
I actually think they were too casual. They played like a team that...
Do you think it was actual as opposed to nerves?
The one moment I keep coming back to is Mavaka throwing, and it led to a try, but throwing such a casual out-the-back offload that went to ground on a wet day when all he had to do was pass that ball in two hands and it was a try. Mm. It ended up being a try anyway, but it summed up that first half performance to me. Toulouse and Bordeaux have just been smashing English teams by 60, 80 points. They hammer Wales 49-0. They look like they were a little bit in love with themselves. This is a team that's won one Grand Slam during the Antoine Dupont era.
Won Six Nations during the Dupont era.
Yeah, and that was when they had to go to empty stadiums. The one game they won at the Aviva Stadium, Billy Burns was starting at 10 and there was no one on the ground. This France team is underachieving.
Yeah.
They're getting slaughtered in their own media, which is fair. You know, moving Dupont to 10... to me is arrogant. He's not a 10, and you're taking Jalibert, who was one of your most dangerous players during the game, you're taking him out of the game and you're moving a brilliant at scrum half but an average 10 into your 10 position to try and get Legarek in. They picked a very inexperienced bench, which is fine if you're winning by, you know, 30-40 points, but if you need to win a crunch game like that in the balance, that they weren't able to do it. Their restart work was terrible. I found it really frustrating watching them, because I know that we should be building towards almost a final in Dublin in a month's time. And also, you don't want to give a team like England oxygen. If England are on a massive losing streak, well, keep them on that losing streak, because once they get confidence, they'll start getting good
again. So the rest of the nations have to conspire to keep England down, basically.
Well, that's what I felt even Twickenham last year, when Ireland had kind of somehow conspired to lose that game in death to the Marcus Smith drop. And looked for a while like England were building, and they have a really good young generation coming through. It is good for the tournament that England are able to win games again. Like that, you know, they shouldn't be terrible. They should be strong, but it was I think France lost it more, or they kind of let England, they gave England the path to winning it, which they should never have had.
Yeah, Shane, I found myself cheering as Elliot Daly went over the try line at the end, and then immediately thought, well, hang on, they've won. Are they back in the Six Nations? And also, they've finally found their out half.
Well, I think they have found their out half. And, you know, yeah, they're back in the Six Nations. I didn't actually even consider that. You know, I wasn't even thinking. I was like, just France are down a couple of points. I said, I don't think they have a good route to follow to sort of be up at the top table. I don't think they're quite there yet or anything like it. But, you know, they may have found a way to get there. And that may be based around, you know, their 10. And it's been an issue for them for a long time. You know, it almost feels just off the back of that one game, it feels settled. And it'll be settled for the next while as a result of it, no matter what. But, you know, he's a classy player and a class act. So I think the biggest threat remains with France and, you know, that game in Dublin. What it did sort of bring to my mind, and as Rory said there, they are hugely underachieving. And these years slip by very quickly. And I suppose that's the other element, and it's probably more so for France, that yes, it's a championship, but, you know, they don't have a triple crown to go after either, and there is so much on every game, and that can happen. And no matter, you know, they might have been confident going in, they might have been too confident going into the game, and they might have been too relaxed, but at some point, when the tables start to turn, and we saw it happen, you know, when it happened in that game, those sort of nagging details or those nagging, you know, doubts start to enter your if not your conscious, then your subconscious. And it's like, hang on a second, we haven't won anything here. If we lose today, the Grand Slam is gone for another year. Yes, it's a championship, but the Grand Slam is a thing and that's gone. And actually, you know, maybe we lose the championship as well. And that those sort of pressures impact performance and change these games in the middle of games. And I suppose, no, that's the point of the Six Nations as well, because players are dealing with all that. And I have to say, you know, Ireland have been brilliant at dealing with it, and they've dealt with it like no other Irish team in history over the last 3 years.
Just on what Shane was saying there, it does also make you look at Ireland since, say, 2000, since Gatland or O'Driscoll and those came through, how ridiculously consistent we are as a nation, far more than France and England, who are and Wales, who've had their ups but their serious downs, obviously, that Ireland generally are now the most consistent European nation besides World Cup quarterfinals.
Yeah, well, that's quite consistent as well, isn't it? So, and it's gone to another level under Farrell, really. I know Schmidt did pick off three titles, and including a Grand Slam, and I wouldn't diminish that for one second. But since they beat England in that final game of the 21 Six Nations, they've lost two games, I think, and they're on course to possibly win a second Grand Slam in 3 years. And their level of performance rarely dips. It's kind of what Shane was talking about earlier with Scotland. You know what you're going to get from Ireland.
It did a bit in November, though, didn't it? Isn't that why we were all so worried about this?
It did, and that's absolutely true. But they looked like the team that won the tournament 2 years ago in the first two games. To me, I was concerned in November. I did feel like other teams had figured them out in the game and moved away from them. But it looks like they've invested a lot of work into figuring that out. It does look like they are the best managed group of players in the tournament, and they do tend to peak for Six Nations because it's financially very important to the RFU. It's their bread and butter. So there is a lot that goes into this. But the consistency across the board is, like, we shouldn't take it for granted. We're very lucky to have, because we could have had a great team for a while and then completely disappeared, like Wales or Scotland are on the cusp of that a little bit. They've got a really good, consistent team in where they are, kind of third best team in the tournament, but their 20s are terrible every year. So at some stage, when Russell goes and a couple of other goes, you'd be worried where Scotland go. You've no concerns about what Ireland are going to do. They'll always be in and around in the next 5, 6, 7 years, and they have been for 25. So it's impressive.
Would you be? It felt like an old school French away day performance, and I actually thought the likes of Edwards had eliminated that from them. Would you be certain that France are going to turn up in Dublin?
I think they'll turn up because they are a team at that level, like Ireland, New Zealand, South Africa, and England are flirting with that level. And I think performance wise, they often get to that level within games, but aren't able to do it in 80 minutes. So they'll take some beating. It reminds me of the game 2 years ago when they came over and played their part in an all time classic, but Ireland still scored 4 tries and won it. I'd be pretty confident that at home Ireland will have enough. If they're playing as well as they're playing now, if they're a bit more ruthless as we discussed earlier, we'll be able to dismiss them. But no, I certainly think it'll be the hardest game of Ireland's championships by a mile. I don't expect them to show up and roll over. This France team doesn't do that. They didn't do it on Saturday. They did a lot of things wrong, but they're attacking talent and their ability to cut you is like Bilbray and Pinot will score tries. Ireland will be broken in ways that no one else has been able
they
to
may not drop the ball over the try line quite as often.
Well, it might be a bit drier as well. Yeah. So, you know, that by that time of year, the Aviva pitch is great. You know, it should be like it's still going to be a great game. It's a pity it's not two unbeaten teams, though. I do think for the tournament, it would have been nice to have it. But I expect them to perform, but I expect Ireland to do a slam now.
Mm. All right, Rory, Shane, thanks a million.
Cheers.
If you wear glasses, you know how hard it is to find the perfect pair. But step into a Warby Parker store and you'll see it doesn't have to be. Not only will you find a great selection of frames, you'll also meet helpful advisors and friendly optometrists. Yep, many Warby Parker locations also offer eye exams. So the next time you need glasses, sunglasses, contact lenses, or a new prescription, you know where to look. To find a Warby Parker store near you or to book an eye exam, head over to warbyparker.com/retail.
It's true that some things change as we get older. But if you're a woman over 40 and you're dealing with insomnia, brain fog, moodiness, and weight gain, you don't have to accept it as just another part of aging. And with Midi Health, you can get help and stop pushing through it alone. The experts at Midi understand that all these symptoms can be connected to the hormonal changes that happen around menopause. And Midi can help you feel more like yourself again. Many healthcare providers aren't trained to treat or even recognize menopause symptoms. MIDI clinicians are menopause experts. They're dedicated to providing safe, effective, FDA-approved solutions for dozens of hormonal symptoms, not just hot flashes. Most importantly, they're covered by insurance. 91% of MIDI patients get relief from symptoms within just 2 months. You deserve to feel great. Book your virtual visit today at joinmidi.com. That's joinmidi.com.
Yeah. What up? This is Dr. Trey.
Shane O'Donnell, telling us of his astronaut dreams.
The party's going on.
I'm joined by John Giles.
Owen McDevitt.
This is Owen McDevitt.
Here's the character. There's a lot of people around the world who think he's terrific.
I feel the way that you're pronouncing that word is interesting.
His name is Owen McDevitt.
Astronaut.
A podcaster who dominates the Irish airwaves.
Astronaut dreams.
That's how Owen was saying it. Astronaut.
There's an old Dr. Dre song that's in my head, and I don't want to go into the lyrics of it. If people know the song, they know it. Plenty of ass, so call me
an astronaut. Owen McDevitt.
Maybe that's what's lodged in my head that comes out that way. Oh god,
astronaut.
That tune, that lyric has now come right in my head. I've got to move on.
Yeah.
Owen McDevitt.
Astronaut dreams.
I don't know what went wrong there, Don.
I think he's awful, and I think he's a disgrace to his profession.
Astronaut.
Levels 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5.
There you go. After the success of Steak Knife, Mark Horgan is back to doing what he does best. Ridiculous audio beds. Steak Knife, by the way, has smashed through the 2 million listens at this point. The whole series is available now, wherever you get your podcasts. That's pretty much it for today. Super Bowl chat tomorrow with US Murph. We'll record that later on today.
They got it wrapped up nice and early.
Yeah.
And we thanked them for it.
Thanks, Murph.
Thank you.
Thanks, Simon.
Thanks, Owen. Thanks, Murph.
Thanks, Kevin. Thank you, Kevin. Thanks
for listening. Chat tomorrow.
That's the second time it's gone off.
They never go home, those boys.
The second captain's
world service.
It is not war and death and famine, it's not that at all. It's the opposite of that, it's to persuade that there's a world outside of that. That's why sport's important.
Does it ever feel like you're a marketing professional just speaking into the void? Well, with LinkedIn ads, you can know you're reaching the right decision makers. You can even target buyers by job title, industry, company, seniority, skills. Wait, did I say job title yet? Get started today and see how you can avoid the void and reach the right buyers with LinkedIn ads. We'll even give you a $100 credit on your next campaign. Get started at linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply.
If you haven't noticed, it's winter, and now more than ever, I'm in need of a little treat. That's why I joined First Leaf, a wine club that delivers my favorite types of wine right to my door. Because there's really no better treat than a glass of delicious red, white, or rosé. So go ahead and treat yourself to world-class wines from First Leaf. Go to tryfirstleaf.com/winter to get your first 6 bottles for just $44.95 with free shipping. That's tryfirstleaf.com/winter.
Hey there, buddy. Did you know that the entire world of software is changing with unbelievable speed because of AI?
Artificial intelligence? I heard it was evil.
Maybe so, but it's also making it possible to do and build things that could never be done before.
I wish there was some kind of podcast that would help me make sense of it all.
Well, I have great news. I'm Rich Ciotti.
And I'm Paul Ford. We are software industry veterans, and we're blown away by the potential of AI.
Check out Reckless, the weekly podcast about how AI is changing everything about the global software industry.
Reckless.